Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome in on what is a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and as always, streaming on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. So we are now 2 days removed from the Super Bowl. And we are in the second day of digesting that beatdown that occurred in New Orleans as the Philadelphia Eagles just smothered the Kansas City Chiefs. Forget about the AFC for a second. The Eagles right now are the standard in the NFC. We've seen this Philadelphia Eagles team win a Super Bowl in Super Bowl 52. We then see them always be a good team, get back to a Super Bowl in Super Bowl 57, lose it, and now they've done what very few teams have been able to do, right? The Bengals did it once, didn't lead to a championship. The Buccaneers did it in a Super Bowl. Tom Brady is no longer there. But the Eagles are not only the standard in the NFC right now, but they are the one team that is still active, still with their core, that could actually put a dent in the armor of the Kansas City Chiefs. So just looking at the NFC, because, right, we look at it in the AFC lenses of who can dethrone Kansas City. And we talked about this, right? Is it the Cincinnati Bengals? Is it the Buffalo Bills? Is it the Baltimore Ravens? How we talk about the Chiefs is now how we need to talk about the Eagles in the NFC. Now, if the Eagles could go win a Super Bowl next year, or they go win another one 2 years from now, then they start to mirror Kansas City. But Kansas City has won 3 Super Bowl championships with Patrick Mahomes. They've also been to 2 others. So when I look at the landscape of the NFC, I just have a simple question. Who is the team, as we get set to go into the offseason, free agency, NFL draft, and before you know it, and I know it seems far away, but before you know it, we will have the summertime here. I'll be on a lot of vacation on Fridays, if I'm being honest with you, in the summer. And September will come around, and we will have football back. So I know it seems like a long layoff, but as we get to that point, the question's going to be who in the AFC can find a way to dethrone Kansas City, and who in the NFC can find a way to dethrone the Philadelphia Eagles. So I'm just asking that question right out of the gate. Who in the NFC entering next season right now would you say has the best chance to take down the Eagles when it matters? Because this Eagles core is real, it's spectacular, it's unbelievable, and you have Jalen Hurts who's young, you have Saquon Barkley who's still young, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, an offensive line. Well, where their elder statesman on the offensive line is still dominant in Lane Johnson. He's not retiring anytime soon. They've done a good job in replacing Jason Kelce. You also have Mailata, who's unbelievable as a left tackle, one of the better tackles in the league. And then you get to the defense, which here is the scary thought about the Philadelphia Eagles. It's the same thing the way that we talked about with Kansas City the last few years, except this Eagles team had a better offense than Kansas City did this past season. And what I've always said about the Chiefs is what makes them so tough to beat and what makes them so scary and makes them such a what feels like an unbeatable force is that their defense is better than their offense. And on offense, they have the best player in the league, period, in Patrick Mahomes, who right now is the third greatest quarterback of all time, but behind Joe Montana and Tom Brady, 2 for Montana, 1 for Tommy Brady. But that's why I like the Eagles, and that's why I picked the Eagles to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, because the Eagles had a better defense than Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs offensive line was a major point of a question, and I thought the Eagles were going to be able to maul them in the trenches and they were going to deliver a few big punches early. Now, I didn't know they would knock them out in the first half, but I remember saying it on Friday, the Eagles had to do what the Texans couldn't do, and the Texans' defense was awesome up against the Chiefs, but their offense didn't take advantage of it. And I remember saying if the Eagles could build a big enough lead, I think they'll have the offense that's good enough to not only not maintain the pace all throughout the game, but be able to go on out there and get a victory. And little did we know it was going to be, 24-0 at halftime, and it was pretty much night-night even when you started the second half. So that Eagles team, from a complimentary standpoint, is the most complete team in football. And you look at it on the offensive side, we already went through the youngsters that are there. But on the defensive side of the ball, which is their best unit, you look all across the board, and you're not going to be able to keep all these guys, but you have a young nucleus. Jalen Carter on a rookie contract. Nolan Smith on a rookie contract. Zach Bond just had a breakout year, even though he's been in the league for a while. Quinyon Mitchell on a rookie contract. Cooper DeJean on a rookie contract. And most of these guys are early on their rookie contracts. So you look at this Eagles core with the coach now who is respected. They have the best general manager in the sport, and they got the best roster in the sport. They are going to be a team that, just because you win one, and we always do this, right? Is this the start of a dynasty? And sometimes there's teams that win, and you go, it doesn't feel like the start of a dynasty. For example, when the LA Rams said F those draft picks and they went all in and they won a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, did anyone think that the Rams were starting a dynasty? No, they didn't. But you look at a team like Kansas City, they have been that next dynasty in the NFL. But if you're going to get someone that's going to challenge Kansas City the most and maybe be able to go get a few more Super Bowls, I don't think it's crazy to say that the Eagles could do that. Now, I remember being in Philadelphia when the Eagles won Super Bowl 52, and they were such a complete team, right? Duh, that's how you win a Super Bowl. You'd be a complete team. But Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, all those guys said, this is going to be a regular feeling. And that team is really damn good. But this team is even better. And this team is at a better spot with an unquestioned franchise quarterback. You're going to still get three more prime years of Saquon Barkley if he could stay healthy. You got a dynamic 1-2 punch at wide receiver in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith, he could go to many other teams and he could be their number one wide receiver. But the greatest part about this team is the defense is so young and this defense is so dominant. And here's also the crazy part too. That defense didn't even play a full season at this dominant level. The last 2 months is really when this defensive scheme and the players got comfortable with the new defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio. And also they lost to Kobe Dean late in the season, who was an incredibly underrated player, one of those Georgia guys, and was having his breakout season for the Philadelphia Eagles. And who knows, I would not put it past Howie Roseman. If Howie really gets in his bag here and he goes and gets Myles Garrett, that wouldn't shock me whatsoever. Myles Garrett was on with us at the Super Bowl, and Myles Garrett was sitting there saying, hey, Eagles fans basically have been screaming at me all week. You know, come to Philadelphia. Let's grab a cheesesteak. So this Eagles team, they have something special brewing. That's clear with what happened 2 years ago up against the Chiefs where they went blow for blow for them, but they didn't get the job done. But then to get that redemption 2 years later, it's impossible to not wonder if they could get another one. And right now, if you tell me and just ask me the question, Zach, will they get another Super Bowl victory? Will they win another Lombardi Trophy in the next 5 years? I would say yes. And I'm usually someone that's skeptical whenever a team wins to say, yeah, they're definitely going to be back and they're definitely going to get another championship because it's so tough to do. It really is. And sometimes people like to say, oh, this team's going to be a dynasty. They don't end up becoming that. Like, look at the Seahawks. The Seahawks, when they won that first one, people said they were going to eventually be a dynasty. They got back to the Super Bowl the next season, and then one play changed the entire direction of that dynasty that they thought was going to happen. So things could change quickly, but the Eagles feel like they're going to be around for the next 4 or 5 years with this young core. And now you have guys that have won a championship, and this is now a team that is obviously the best threat to continue to try to put a stop to the Kansas City Chiefs because of the fact that now in two Super Bowls, you've had Jalen Hurts outplay Mahomes in both of them, and more importantly, they've been able to get one championship. But the question I asked to start the show is, who has the best chance of dethroning the Eagles in the NFC? Because the NFC, just like the AFC, even though the AFC, the NFC is in a better place now, but you look at it, both of these conferences are chasing a clear and obvious team. In the AFC, you're chasing Kansas City. And right, Buffalo, Baltimore, and outside of the 1 year for the Bengals, they've not been able to get the job done in the big game up against Kansas City. The Houston Texans weren't ready for the moment this year as well to try to put their mark on the AFC. So you look at the NFC, outside of Philadelphia, I think we're in a spot where to be that second or third team in the NFC, it's up for grabs. Like the Commanders went 12-5 last year. Are the Commanders going to be back in the same spot that they were this past season? You know, we'll see what they do this offseason. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys are going to find a way to go on some crazy run, but they were in the playoffs for three straight years at 12 wins, and now they're entering a new era with Brian Schottenheimer coming in. The Rams, I like that Rams team. I like that Rams roster, but it doesn't look like Cooper Kupp's going to be on it. So who are you replacing Cooper Kupp with? And also, is Matthew Stafford going to be your quarterback? The Seahawks have a good roster, but I don't believe Geno Smith's a big-time quarterback. I think the San Francisco 49ers can turn it around and get back to an NFC championship game next season. And then in the NFC North, you have a deep division. We'll see what year one has in store for the duo of Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. The Packers last year were similar to the Texans, where they had this unbelievable season. They didn't take the next step this past season. Minnesota was really damn good this year, but they were fraudulent come postseason time. And now we'll see what J.J. McCarthy does at quarterback. I don't think Sam Darnold will be back. And the Lions are a heck of a team at 15-2, but they had the number one overall seed, and they let their guard down, and they got smacked by the Washington Commanders in the first round of the playoffs, or what was divisional round weekend, their first playoff game. And then you look at the NFC South. Tampa Bay is good. Does anyone think Tampa Bay is going to go win a Super Bowl? No. The Falcons, all right, let's see what Michael Penix Jr. does. So I look at the NFC, everyone's chasing Philly, and there's a lot of questions around these other teams for the second and third spot. But if I had to say, who's the team that's got the best chance of dethroning the Eagles in the NFC, it's still the Detroit Lions. Because Dan Campbell has that bleep you mentality. I understand they've lost both their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator, but they are built in a great spot on the offensive side of the ball in the trenches, led by Penei Sewell. You got a very good quarterback, but not a great quarterback in Jared Goff. You know, you got a heck of a game changer at the running back position in Jahmyr Gibbs. I like Amon-Ra St. Brown a lot. The tight end Laporte is really damn good. And now the defense has to take the next step, but I don't think the defense, even though they were horrible or they were a weakness this year, I don't think the defense is that far off. Because remember how many guys got hurt this year on the defensive side of the ball for the Lions, led by their best defensive player who was hurt in Aiden Hutchinson. And that could potentially be a Myles Garrett destination as well. So if I had to take a guess right now, who has the best chance in dethroning the Eagles in the NFC, I would go with the Detroit Lions. Stu, right out of the gate, who's your team in the NFC if the Lions are off the board that got the best chance to dethrone the Eagles next season?
The Lions are off the board. I think I'm going to go with the team that the Eagles beat in the NFC Championship, and that is the Commanders. Now, I know they're young. Jaden Daniels is still very young, but the fact that they have him on a rookie contract with some cap room to spare, you would imagine they're going to get better. They kept Kingsbury as their OC. I just love the ceiling of this team, so I think that's honestly the best bet for me right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we'll see how much their defense improves. Like, hey, Myles Garrett has been speculated there. Also, on the offensive side of the ball, you bring up an astute point, Stu. You could take advantage of not having to pay the quarterback $55, $60 million right now. So, yes, you have Terry McLaurin, who is a heck of a wide receiver in this league, but could they be in the market for a T. Higgins? Could they maybe go make a trade? I thought they should have done this at the deadline, but Davante Adams wanted to only go play with Aaron Rodgers. Could they maybe go get Davante Adams when he becomes available this offseason as well? So those are some things just to think about. So Stu takes the Commanders. I take the Lions. Biggest threat to the Eagles entering next season in the NFC. Samter, who's yours?
I think it's a team that we've kind of slept on, that I think that the window is still there and there's so much talent if they're healthy. I'm still going with the San Francisco 49ers. Because like you said, I don't believe in anyone in the NFC South. The Packers, I can't believe in right now. The Vikings will take a step back. The Cowboys, duh. The Rams would have been my pick, but there's so much uncertainty about this Matthew Stafford stuff. I was going to go Rams, but because of the Stafford uncertainty, I'm going 49ers.
Yeah, I look at the Niners. I don't think it's the end of the world if they get rid of Deebo Samuel. I just think that's one of their cap casualties. That, you know, we'll see if Trent Williams comes back, but their offensive line, you know, was banged up last year. Brock Purdy, I think, is good, but I don't think he's great. You know, at the running back position, you would just hope that Christian McCaffrey can stay healthy. You had McCaffrey and Ayuk as a wide receiver both go down. And defensively, they still have a bevy of talent led by Fred Warner and also Nick Bosa. But that's a team that just needs to stay healthy. And if they stay healthy, hey, we've seen them before, right? Even after they lost the NFC Championship game to the Philadelphia Eagles, we saw them come back the next year and get back to the Super Bowl. They've been oh so close, but yet so far. And that's a team that next year, I don't want to say it's the end of the road for them, but I think next year is really the last all-in hurrah before you could see some major changes to this core. And I'm not talking about the coach or the GM, but just when you get these guys get older that have been here with so much wear and tear in the body, there could be some changes after this season when you have to let go of some guys that were really damn good for your franchise, even great. But when you keep on getting close and yet so far, eventually you maybe have to move on from some of those guys because of the wear and tear on the body. But Samter sent me this before the show, and I did not look at it, but he told me what the impetus of what he sent me. He sent me the Super Bowl odds. The latest Super Bowl odds are out there. And I wrote down five teams. And I'm just curious, this is AFC and NFC, who has the best odds to win the Super Bowl next season? I was thinking of putting the Chiefs in the one spot, but since the Eagles just won and how much they dominated the Chiefs, I think the Eagles are in the one spot. Are the Eagles in the one spot, or they put them at two?
They are at the one spot at plus 625.
Okay, I will then say the Chiefs are two.
You are a prognosticator of all prognosticators. They're number two at plus 650.
So the other three teams that I have here are the Lions, Ravens, and Bills. Those will be my top five teams. I'm going to say they put the Bills in at three. Are the Bills in at three?
The Bills are in at three.
They are.
Plus 675.
Lions four?
No. Lions are not four.
So the Lions are five or the Ravens four?
The Ravens are actually technically tied with the Bills at three, both at 675.
Okay.
And the Lions are fifth, almost double at plus 1,100, which I'm surprised how far back the Lions are.
So I'm wondering who's the sixth team. That's the question. So I look in the AFC. I'm not giving the answer yet. I'm just spitballing here. The Bengals could potentially be a team there. The Chargers, it wouldn't surprise me just because of the Harbaugh love. The Commanders, I don't think it's the Packers or the Vikings. Is it the Bengals in the sixth spot?
No, the Bengals are a little bit down at plus 2,000.
Commanders then?
Commanders are seven at plus 1,700.
It's not the Chargers, right?
Nope. Chargers are behind the Bengals at plus 2,400.
So this is for the sixth spot.
This is for the sixth spot we're looking at.
So it's an NFC team.
Do you want hints?
No, just is it AFC or NFC?
NFC.
So it's an NFC team. Packers?
Nope. Packers tied with the Bengals at plus 2,000.
Wow. See, this sixth one's tricky. And I don't, it's not the Rams, right?
Nope, the Rams are below the Bengals between the Chargers at plus 2,200.
So who the heck is it?
Who did I say?
Oh, San Francisco.
49ers plus 1,400 coming in at sixth place.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then following the Chargers down low is the Texans, Vikings, Broncos, Bucks, Bears, Dolphins, and then surprisingly,
you know what?
Steelers are way down there at plus 5,500.
You're mentioning the Dolphins. That's where we can end the list right there. It's the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Jalen Hurts has one of the great all-time great redemption stories. We will take a look back at some of the best redemption stories when we come on back, when we return on the Infinity Sports Network in 5 minutes.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
When Devontae Smith was at Alabama, he was one of my favorite players in all of college football. And I always thought this was nuts. When you get a game-winning touchdown catch in the national championship in your freshman season, how do you top that, right? How do you find a way for that not to be the best moment of your college career? But then a few years later, he won the Heisman Trophy, had 117 yards receiving, 1,856 receiving yards, 23 receiving touchdowns, and also won another national championship. That is just an unbelievable college career when you bookend it with the game-winning catch of the national championship, and then on the other side, Heisman Trophy, another national championship. And when the Eagles ended up getting him in the draft, I just thought that was an absolute steal. And I was more of a fan in that draft of Devontae Smith than Jalen Waddle. Now, obviously, both players have had very successful careers. But Devontae Smith in the big games and the big moments, that's where he really steps up. And even though I thought the game was really over anyway at that point, that was the final like nail in the coffin. And think about that when you're up double digits in the Super. I think you're up 24 at that point or whatever it was. And you're still airing it out and chucking it deep to Devontae Smith. And he makes that touchdown grab, which was an awesome throw and an awesome catch. Jalen Hurts to Devontae Smith. But really, the redemption story of Jalen Hurts is such a major storyline and such a feel-good storyline of this Super Bowl. Because you look at Jalen Hurts in that national championship game where Devontae Smith caught the game-winning touchdown pass down the left sideline up against the Georgia Bulldogs. It was Tua Tagovailoa who threw it. Because at halftime, Jalen Hurts got benched. And not only did he get benched, I remember him after the game. It was such a cool sign of being a good teammate. And I'm not saying that's an easy spot, but it just showed you the type of man that Jalen Hurts was in that moment when he immediately ran up to Tua Tagovailoa to congratulate him. And then in the interview, he could have pouted, he could have sulked. He didn't do that because he was just happy for the team that they ended up winning, even though internally, you got to be a little bit annoyed because you got benched in a national championship game. And I talked to him when he was a Heisman Trophy finalist at Oklahoma. But if we could get Jalen Hurts on the show and bring back up some of this stuff, I would ask him, why did you stay after getting benched in the national championship game? Because he stayed that year. And then as we talked about before, they did go on to need him in that SEC championship game the following season because Tua got hurt. And Jalen Hurts led Alabama in that game to win an SEC championship up against Georgia. And then after that, he goes to Oklahoma and he ends up get an invite to the Heisman Trophy and makes a college football playoff. And I remember this. I was talking about it when I was working for Sirius, how I would have been fine if the Patriots would have drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. I thought it'd be a good project quarterback. And he goes to Philadelphia in the second round, and it was like, holy smokes, oh my goodness gracious, they have Carson Wentz there. Carson Wentz was, at the time, the quarterback that was paid to be the dude. And very quickly, because of Jalen Hurts' authentic work ethic, and him being a really good teammate, even though there was a little friction last year, he was able to find a way to take Carson Wentz's job. And since then, right, we've seen him wild card round in the playoffs. We've seen him in a Super Bowl where they lose, then the collapse of 10-1. But then this redemption story, it's not even his best redemption story of his career. We're like, yeah, you win a Super Bowl, sure. But when you talk about getting benched, right, that's where the story starts for Jalen Hurts. If they were to do a movie on Jalen Hurts, I think it starts him getting benched at halftime of the national championship game. And then what he did go on to accomplish since then, everything that we just ran into. But then the ultimate moment of winning a Super Bowl, and 2 years ago he's the best player on the field, but they didn't get the victory. This time he wins a Super Bowl MVP, and he hoists that Lombardi. So that's just an all-time great redemption story. So let's go around the room now. We will do all-time great redemption stories in sports, and we'll give one each. Mine's actually in the boxing world. And one of the more emotional and moving interviews I've ever done was before one of these Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury fights. I was able to interview Tyson Fury. And they told us we only had 10 minutes. But it was such a compelling interview, and Tyson just kept on opening it up and going and going and going and going. We ended up doing a nearly 20-minute interview with Tyson Fury. And in that interview, we talked about his story, where he overcame suicidal thoughts, substance abuse, depression. He was out of the boxing world for 3 years. He ballooned up to 400 pounds, right? This was one of the more emotional interviews that I've ever done. And someone was advocating for mental health, and he was just pouring his heart out and telling us his story. And he ends up getting back into the ring after nearly taking his own life with how much he drank, suicidal thoughts, with how much weight that he did gain. And he ended up winning multiple times a heavyweight championship. And those fights up against Deontay Wilder, for someone my age, right? Like, you talk to older people, boxing really resonated with them. What boxing was back then is what, for people my age, UFC is now. UFC is more popular than boxing. But for boxing, as someone who's 30 years old, there hasn't been many moments where people have really had boxing resonate with them. Because Mayweather-Pacquiao happened too many years, way too late. And Mayweather was just a complete a-hole about the drug testing process, if we're just being serious. I thought it was very cowardly of Mayweather. You know, even when you had the McGregor-Mayweather fight, it was a gimmick. It actually ended up being better than what it was, but people are at least interested in it. But now I feel like whenever we only talk about boxing, it's because of the Paul brothers, which is ridiculous for what boxing used to be. But those fights, Fury and Wilder, they were unbelievable. And to see what Tyson Fury did to Deontay Wilder was just sensational. And to see a guy, right, who nearly took his own life and was so depressed and was abusing so many substances, and it almost not only cost him his life, but also his career, and he was out of the sport for 3 years, to go back into the ring and be able to get yourself in good enough shape and also just be standing on 2 feet, and you take out Deontay Wilder twice, that is, to me, I for years I thought, and I won't share my other favorite redemption story because I don't know if Stu or Samter has it, but I'll tell you what it is later. But that, for me, for a while was my favorite redemption story, but then Tyson Fury happened in sports, and that became my number one redemption story in sports during my lifetime. Stu, what do you got cooking?
So at first I was just thinking the four major sports, but then we expanded beyond that, and then I realized, of course, it's Tiger Woods, 2019 Masters.
That used to be my favorite one.
It was so good. He was the greatest golfer of all time, the greatest golfer of our generation. Didn't win for so many years, so many injuries, the knee, the back. And then I feel like everyone in that spring of 2019 were just sitting there that whole weekend rooting for him, and just an amazing story.
Yeah, and Tiger Woods had a massive fall from grace, and it was it completely his fault, right? Cheating on his wife, sleeping with like pretty much every woman in America, and you know a lot of the pills and stuff that he was on with all the injuries that he suffered too. You know, I'll never forget as a youngster where he was going up against Rocco Mediate in that U.S. Open, and They had to go to that 18-hole playoff, and I begged my mom to let me miss school the next day to watch it because Tiger, right, one of my favorite athletes of all time, and it was just so automatic. Tiger would show up on Sunday or whatever in that red, and you knew that he was winning the major championship, but then you had that long layoff, right, where he kept on shooting himself in the foot personally and professionally. His body was breaking down. I forget when it was, but I would always hold out hope for Tiger. Always. And then there was one time he played at the Valspar, and he was like 22 over par. And I go, even as a massive fan of Tiger Woods, that's it. Because the Tiger standard is winning a major championship. That's when Tiger Woods is back. And even when he started to play really well, I'm like, he's not back to being Tiger until he wins a major championship. And to win that Masters, oh, that was so cool. And what made it so neat, I know Tiger just lost his mom, is whenever Tiger would win, when his dad was alive, you know, when his mom was alive, there was always an embrace with his mother or father. And when he was walking off the 18th hole into Butler Cabin, and you had that walk-off at the Masters where he wins another green jacket and, you know, it's such a redemption moment. His kids who've been through so much, right, because of what transpired with their father's wrongdoing. And, right, he would used to say, like, my kids used to not think of golf in a positive way because dad always, when it came to golf, when really they were alive, it wasn't the way that we knew Tiger. It was always something that was negative because of what was going on in Tiger's personal life. To see his kids have that embrace with Tiger, right, their dad, was just so damn cool. And it sent a chill up your spine. So Tiger Woods off the board. I go Tyson Fury. Samter, what do you go with? We go boxing and golf. I wasn't expecting that's where we're going to go. But, hey, two mega stars, obviously, in Tiger Woods and Tyson Fury.
Well, I was going to go off the board, too. Maybe a little Nancy Kerrigan in ice skating. Maybe Virginia Cavaliers as a one seed losing to a 16.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Then winning the national championship the next year. Baker Mayfield was one, but I'm going way off the board.
Baker, all-time Baker Mayfield?
I mean, it's pretty darn good. Number one pick, with down and out. Went to the Panthers, got cut, went to the Rams, played a game on like 2 hours' notice, was good.
It's and a then, good boom, story, but all-time great redemption story?
Well, that's why I'm not picking him, but these were some of the ones I came up with. I'm going to go off the board. Let's go across the pond to England, Leicester City Soccer. They were promoted from the lower division in 2013.
Stu, why are you laughing here?
Then they avoided getting relegated the next year. And then in 2015-2016,
when Ted Lasso was based
all odds, and they won the Premier League in 2015-2016. No, actually, that was my number two. Me and Stu just wanted to troll you. My number one is the 99 Rams and Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner, boxing groceries, playing in the Arena Football League, comes out of nowhere because of an injury to Trent Green.
I was about to shut your mic off if
we
were going to continue to soccer.
Yeah, and then he takes over for Trent Green. And has the greatest show on turf with that amazing offense, that 99 Rams. It was a team that was down and out, a franchise that was down and out, and a quarterback that was down and out. And it was one of the most remarkable stories. They've made movies about it. They have nicknames for the team. It's incredible.
And also, to me, the Warner one is the best part, because then after that, you know, everyone thought his career was over after he got benched for Eli Manning. He goes to Arizona. I know he didn't win a Super Bowl.
Should have.
But they didn't lose that Super Bowl because of Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald. They didn't. You know, the defense at the end couldn't make the stop on Santonio Holmes.
Sure, though Kurt Warner did throw a 102-yard interception return for a touchdown to end the first half.
But he also threw a touchdown at the end that put them up.
Yes.
So defense got to go make a stop there. Not everyone's going to go and play perfect. You know, Bobby in the YouTube chat also threw out a good one, too. And his was Josh Hamilton. That's another sensational one.
Yeah, very good one.
If you know the story of Josh Hamilton. All righty, we'll take a break on the Zach Gelb Show.
Leicester City, baby.
Why would the Rams dump Matthew Stafford? And when Aaron Rodgers becomes available, does he still excite teams? We'll get into that on the other side. Update time here, Zach. And the Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. This week's players, Eagles defensive star Josh Sweat, in Sunday's win over the Chiefs. Sweat had 6 tackles and 2.5 sacks in 8 postseason games. Sweat now has 21 total tackles and 5 sacks, and he barely broke a sweat in the Super Bowl. Ba-dum-bum. Anyway, 2 stories right here. Matthew Stafford and Aaron Rodgers. I don't get this one, Stu, and maybe you could explain it to me. Why is there a thought that Matthew Stafford is going to be off the Rams this year? Like, if you're the Rams, you almost defeated the eventual Super Bowl champions in the Philadelphia Eagles. You have Matthew Stafford as your quarterback. Kyron Williams is a really good running back in this league. I know they're getting rid of Cooper Kupp, but you still got Puka Nacua. Hopefully Tyler Higbee could be healthy for the entire season. And on the defensive side of the ball, you have a good young defensive core that just started to get their feet wet last season. Like, if you get rid of Stafford, who the heck are you bringing in? This doesn't make sense to me at all, Stu. And I have to think it's more just so the BS contract negotiation games and things like that. And Stafford probably wants a higher number, and the Rams don't want to have to break the bank here in terms of this restructure. It makes no sense to me why Matthew Stafford wouldn't want to be back on the Rams, or why the Rams wouldn't want to have Matthew Stafford for next season.
Yeah, neither makes sense. And look, if the Rams, let's say they were the Falcons and he drafted a quarterback in the first or second round like the Falcons did with Penix,
yeah,
I could understand it. But they don't have someone waiting in the wings. And then for Stafford, like, where are you going to go that gives you a better chance of at least making the playoffs and competing for a playoff spot? That's tough for me.
Did you see that Adam Schefter tweeted this out? I think there's a reason why you tweeted this way. Giants are hiring former Jaguars and Bills wide receiver coach Chad Hall as their assistant quarterback coach, per a source. Hall now reunites with his former Bills colleagues, head coach Brian Daboll and GM Joe Shane in New York. Now, you may be saying, Zach, why the heck are you reading this? Well, here's the other part of this tweet. He also is the brother-in-law of current Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford. If you're Matthew Stafford, why the bleep are you going to the Giants? You know, the only thing I could think of, and this may sound crazy, is maybe Stafford thinks he's a borderline Hall of Famer right now, and maybe if you go to a big market like the Giants, at the end of your career, you buddy up with some of the media members, and it just shows you how much of a joke the Hall of Fame process is. But if you don't really have a strong advocate in the way that that process goes, it's tough to get into the Hall of Fame. So could that potentially be it, that he wants to get a little limelight of New York? But, you know, if it goes the other way, because the Giants' offensive line is eh. Malik Nabers is a young star in this league. Tyrone Tracy was a good young running back in his first year. But the Giants are nowhere close where even if they get Matthew Stafford, what, they had three wins last year? So even if Stafford's like a three-win difference, which is a lot for a quarterback, you get to six, maybe seven at best. So I don't see why, outside of that part, Stu, why Stafford would even contemplate going to the Giants.
It makes no sense. I just don't get it at all. And if there was a team out there that was like a good landing spot for him, okay, I could maybe see it, but I don't know. That seems like a weird one to me.
I'm looking at the teams right now. Eagles, no. Commanders, no. Cowboys, no. Giants, okay, sure, they need a quarterback. Rams, no. Like, obviously, he's there. So I don't see why they move on from him. And no one in the NFC West is making a deal here. Like, why would, if the Rams are getting rid of him, they're not letting him go inside the NFC West unless they just outright cut him. You know, Seattle then could be fun, if we're being serious. But I don't think that's going to happen. Cardinals going to go with Kyler Murray. 49ers, that would be fun, you know, if you think he's the missing link, but I think they're going to pay Brock Purdy. You know what's crazy? Him going back to the Lions wouldn't be a bad option. It really wouldn't. But, like, I'm not going to run through all the teams here. There's no option, though, that's out there where you go, okay, that team, it's realistic they're going to get off their quarterback, and they need one, and they need a, like, the Dolphins, for example. I don't think the Dolphins are getting rid of Tua Tagovailoa. Tua Tagovailoa proved his worth this year. When he was out, the team sucked. He came back, and they ended up being fine. You know, they need Tua. So, you want to go to the Raiders, Matthew Stafford? That's what you want to do? You want to go to the Browns? Like, come on. And Indy's going to go give it another run with Anthony Richardson. I don't think Indy would be a bad destination for him, but I don't think they're giving up on Anthony Richardson this quick, even though they did bench him last season. But also his wife. You know, Kelly Stafford, who always makes me laugh. Because Kelly Stafford, she always likes to stir it up. But then the moment there's any negativity about her, I feel like we always get this, like, emotional post from Kelly Stafford. Like, going after the Lions fans because people were booing Matthew Stafford. All right, I'm not saying, like, okay, it's right that you're booing, like, children. I get that when she brought her children to Detroit for a game. But what do you expect? You know, Matthew Stafford, even though he used to be beloved in Detroit, it was a playoff game. He's part of the enemy. What, you thought that people were going to cheer you everywhere you walked? It's just stupid fans being fans, right? But Kelly Stafford last night tweeted a photo out. I guess Matthew and Kelly took a photo together, or maybe this was edited and it's blurry. And she wrote, "Future might be blurry, but the present is always clear with you." And it's herself and her husband and Matthew Stafford. So that's Kelly Stafford even playing into the trade rumors. So I guess where there's smoke, there's fire. Ultimately, maybe I'm going to use common sense here, and common sense won't prevail, but I think Matthew Stafford should be back with the Rams. Now, let me play you this. This is Diana Rossini, as we'll get to Rodgers, on Aaron Rodgers meeting with the Jets. This was on the Scoop City podcast with Chase Daniel.
When they had conversations with Aaron Rodgers about what the future would look like, if you're going to be part of this team, you're going to attend all of the training camp, you're not going to do Pat McAfee interviews anymore. So they were really trying to change the way.
They said that?
Yeah. They had conversation with him of, if you were to stay here, here's how we would want it to be. So this to me is Aaron Glenn getting control back.
I respect that with Aaron Glenn. Because, right, we heard that Aaron Glenn was open to keeping Aaron Rodgers, but it needed to be on his terms. You know, you got to be there for the offseason. You got to not be providing a distraction. Because that's the thing with Rodgers, too. It was such hypocritical BS, if we're just being honest. You know, we got to get the leak out of this building. You know, we got to stop creating, like, drama and ridiculous stories. And he would create all of them. And don't get me wrong, sometimes the stories with Rodgers get blown out of proportion, but he's not an innocent person here. He's no innocent victim. So I don't know how Aaron Glenn's going to be as a head coach, but he is the authoritative voice that the Jets need. Now, ultimately, they need to get a quarterback, but I feel like it's just pointless to have Aaron Rodgers there where in all likelihood Aaron Rodgers is going to undermine you. Like, Aaron Rodgers, I've reported this before, and Aaron knows it's true. He tried to undermine Matt LaFleur when he was with Green Bay. He would blow him off for these meetings. LaFleur said, I want you to have more of a role in the game plan. We want to give you more input. And he would keep Matt LaFleur waiting and sometimes just wouldn't even show up. So I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze anymore with Aaron Rodgers. And even if you do bring him back, he's going to play one more season. And what's the best that you could do with Aaron Rodgers next year with this Jets roster? At best, be what, 9-8, 10-7? And you make the playoffs and you lose in the first round? I don't think that juice is worth the squeeze. And that's why the Jets, they're doing the right thing, ripping the Band-Aid off, and they could say, oh, we tried to get Aaron to do it our way. You know, we needed Aaron to change because things got really ugly last year, and he wasn't willing to change. Now, do they get their quarterback this year? I don't think Sam Darnold going back there. I don't think I would pay Sam Darnold. Can they get someone in the draft? I don't think they're right now in position unless they trade up to get Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. So maybe the Jets just run with a backup quarterback, like, could you have, like, a Jameis Winston there for a year just to weather the storm? And then a year from now, that's when you go pounce in the draft or free agency or even the trade market to see who becomes available at the quarterback position. Overreaction, proper reaction. Next!
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.